from deep inside your radio.
You just can't make the point often enough, ladies and gentlemen, that this focus group thing is so damn fallible. And yet, how much money, how much, I wish I could come up with something that could end up with such wrong results so often and still make so much money. Oh, I have? Thank you. This is to explain, this is from the advertising column of the New York Times, explaining why the nasal spray flu vaccine hasn't caught on. Did you know there was such a thing? See? See how much it hasn't caught on? You didn't even know about it. A nasal spray flu vaccine being brought up by a company called MedImmune, a biotechnology company, co-marketing it with Wyeth, a major pharmaceutical firm. They spent $25 million on a nine-week advertising campaign, advertising directly to you and me, us, the consumers. Good blitz, babe. The campaign emphasized not the risk of death from the flu, but flu's economic and social disruptions in the lives of usually healthy people. People like the other guy who was just in the studio before he left to sneeze. Who would replace you if you got the flu, was the slogan of the campaign. The medication, known as FluMist, has fallen startlingly short of its predicted success. In retrospect, executives said, told the New York Times, many things went wrong. FluMist was positioned as a premium product with a wholesale price of $40, several times higher than a conventional flu shot. But it turned out most consumers preferred the pain of the needle to the payment for the nasal spray, said a spokesman. The price sparked more resistance than our market research led us to believe. I guess that $40 hurts a lot more when you actually have to dig into your wallet to get it than when it's conceptual. Sorry for waxing Canadian there. That was how much was the market research? That's what I'd like to know. That check, ladies and gentlemen, still cleared. Hello, welcome to the show.
Driving, not arriving, on our way back home. We're on our way. chasing paper, getting nowhere, on our way back home. We're on our way home, we're on our way home, we're going home.
We're going home.
My mama was the cold north wind. My daddy was the son of a railroad man from west of hell, where the trains don't even run. Never heard the whistle of a southbound freight or the singing of its driving wheel. No, I never did no wondering. Never did no Never did no wondering after all. They say the highway's just one big road, and it goes from here to there. And they say you carry a heavy load when you're rolling down the line somewhere. Never seen the dance of the telephone poles as they go whizzing by. No, I never did no wondering. Never did no wondering. Never did no wondering after all. Never did no wondering. Life is a life for him, but it never was for me. And I've never soared where the hawk may soar, or see what the hawk might see. Never hiked to heaven on a mountain trail, never rode on a river's ridge. No, I never did no wondering. Never did no
There's no easy days, there's no easy ways.
Just get out there and do it, and sing and they'll sing your song. Laugh while you're getting on, smile and they'll string along, and nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know. And nobody's gonna know. La 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 la.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition, the pre-Thanksgiving edition of the show, all trussed up and stuffed with nothing at all, just like your turkey. No, your turkey's stuffed with something, I'm sure. I'm sure your turkey is stuffed with something good, isn't it, Mama? What? What's going on? Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, some real good news. I don't know if you've heard this, but this would be the best news of the week. My goodness. Remember a couple of years ago, President George W. Bush said, we got to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. That has proved, as you may have noticed, to be a rather formidable task, judging by the results to date. So here's the good news. Forget that. A senior U.S. general said this past Friday, that al-Qaeda mastermind Osama bin Laden had, quote, taken himself out of the picture, and that his capture was not essential to winning the war on terror. Take that, Osama. You are so out of the picture, man. The General Peter Pace says so. You are so out of the picture. He's vice chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff. He made the statement at U.S. military headquarters just north of Kabul, noting that the 11,500-strong U.S.-led force hunting al-Qaeda and Taliban militants in Afghanistan, not counting Geraldo, who's there this weekend, that force is not focusing on individuals. Bin Laden has taken himself out of the picture, Pace said. It's not an individual that's as important as the ongoing campaign of the coalition against terrorists. On the other hand, America's new ambassador to Kabul, Zalmay Khalilzad, yeah, he's one of ours, said earlier this week the U.S. military would redouble its efforts to find bin Laden. While appearing to contradict this, Pace added, that is not to say we would not be glad to capture Osama bin Laden today or tomorrow. Tomorrow. You know what? Tomorrow. I'd like to relax today. He said U.S.-led forces were winning the war against terrorists in Afghanistan despite nearly 400 people being killed in just over 3 months in the bloodiest period since the Taliban's ouster 2 years ago. The fact that the enemy is not pooling up in waves that can be attacked in large numbers to me means that, in fact, the coalition is being effective, Pace said. That's the definition of success. The fact that the enemy is not pooling up in waves that can be attacked in large numbers. According to Reuters, generally U.S. operations, including the latest launched in the northeast of Afghanistan earlier this month, kill few militants due to their apparent ability to blend into local populations or flee into the hills, often crossing into neighboring Pakistan. Hey, isn't Pakistan one of our allies? Afghanistan suspects that Pakistan is turning a blind eye to Taliban and al-Qaeda remnants. Pakistan says it's doing all it can. Also believed to be at large in Afghanistan or Pakistan are Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban, and bin Laden's deputy, Ayman. Now, that's not, I'm not talking to him. That's his name, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Have they taken themselves out of the picture yet? I don't know. It's just a matter of framing. He's out of the picture. That's all it is, ladies and gentlemen. That's the good news. Here's the bad news, because I can't say fair and balanced, can I? Two officials of the... This is news from outside the bubble, however. It's just from the Financial Times of London. Don't worry about it. Two officials of the U.S.-led Coalition Provisional Authority That's the government we installed in Iraq. And the Iraqi Minister of Communications are being investigated by the Pentagon over allegations of taking bribes. Potentially lucrative licenses to build and operate cellular phone networks in Iraq were announced last month by the communications minister. Over the next 4 months, the provisional authority is to award contracts for Iraq's reconstruction that are worth $18 billion. The Pentagon's inspector general launched an investigation into one of the three cell phone contracts, partly because of allegations from a rival. Oh, well, that's just sour grapes. The Pentagon had advanced its inquiries beyond the earliest stages. There's sufficient evidence to merit further inquiry, although the inspector general's office may conclude the allegations are baseless. The officials under investigation were involved in drawing up the rules for bidding on the cell phone contract. The lawyers for the coalition, provisional authority, yeah, even they have lawyers. Isn't that wild? They had recommended delaying signing the agreements for the cell phone licenses for 10 days, pending investigations into charges of cronyism by Iraqi authorities. The authority has repeatedly denied its undertaking investigation. Cell phones in Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. A matter of possible bribery. I believe that's progress. It's not good progress, but it is progress. And now, here, early on in the show, because it's such an unusual story, a tale of airport security. You'll like this. This is not from a listener, not a personal story. I'm waiving most of the normal rules of tales of airport security for this. Dateline Sydney, Australia. New Zealand Prime Minister Helen Clark was frisked at Sydney Airport for explosives in an incident that has embarrassed the Australian government. Despite having a New Zealand security officer with her, Prime Minister Clark was pulled out of a line on October 28th, given a body scan with a new explosive detection device to make sure she was not a bomb-carrying terrorist. Senior Australian government sources said the incident was an embarrassment. It was not regarded as the right way to treat the leader of Australia's close ally, they said. A spokesman for Transport Minister John Anderson said, quote, "You will not be surprised to hear the New Zealand Prime Minister was not found to be carrying any explosives," unquote. Government sources said it was a bit silly to frisk the New Zealand Prime Minister. We would expect her to be recognized by airport security staff. I know the feeling. A senior advisor to Prime Minister Clark said the New Zealand security officer accompanying her was a bit upset that she was being scanned for explosives. The Australian officials were told who she was. This did not stop them. They decided to continue the scan and even sent the results to a laboratory for testing. Prime Minister Clark was believed not to have made a fuss, and her advisors were diplomatic about the incident. Labor Foreign Affairs spokesman, that's the opposition, Kevin Rudd, has called for an apology from Australian Prime Minister Howard and criticized her treatment. Said Mr. Rudd, had John Howard been subjected to this, he would have had a pink fit. It's worth it just for that. A pink fit. Security officials at the airport did not at first recognize Prime Minister Clark, who was on her way to Dubai for a meeting of the World Bank. She had just gone through a metal detector. Her senior advisor was having his laptop checked. I presume that means his computer. Through an X-ray machine, Clark was then pulled out of line. It was an extra security check, her advisor said. She knows that security checks are a fact of life in air travel. We're all equals when it comes to security. No one is exempt. The spokesperson for the transportation secretary defended the decision to go ahead with the screening. It was very brief. It took 30 seconds in all. It's a routine involving a wand wiped over a person's clothing and hands to detect whether they're carrying explosives, he said. The screening by the new explosive detection technology was done on a strictly random basis, he added. If your number comes up, you're screened. At a time when some passengers scream abuse at our security staff, the fact that the Prime Minister of New Zealand is randomly selected for explosive security screening and delayed while it occurred, and B, accepted it, is a lesson for all of our passengers, said the Australian spokesman. Silly and a good lesson. That's a tale of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. Is it a copyrighted feature? You be the judge. Some news of the media. And I like this. This may be my favorite news story of the week. Just for the lovely irony of it. Dateline, New York. Federal authorities have opened an inquiry into how the New York Post obtained a bootleg copy of Mel Gibson's controversial unreleased film, The Passion of Christ, according to three sources familiar with the matter. This is from the L.A. Dog Trainer. The New York Post, isn't that owned by Rupert Murdoch? Doesn't Peter Chernin, head of News Corporation, Rupert Murdoch's number one son here in America, although he's not really his son, hasn't Peter Chernin said over and over again that piracy is the greatest threat facing Western civilization today, movie piracy? Isn't the New York Post owned by... Yes, they are. The Post said on Monday it had obtained a, quote, rough-cut version of the film that we screened with temporary English subtitles, no credits, and further editing changes likely. The newspaper said it held a private screening for a panel made up of a rabbi, a priest, a professor of early Christianity. It sounds like the start of a joke. A rabbi, a priest, and a professor of early Christianity go into a bar and watch a rough cut of a Post movie critic and a reader selected at random. New York Post spokeswoman Susie Halpin could not be reached for comment. Daily Variety quoted the Post as saying, a source provided us with the tape, no copies were made, and we have returned the tape to Gibson's representatives. You know, the movie is controversial, hasn't come out yet. Bootleg copy goes to the New York Post, which writes a story about it. The FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office would not confirm that an investigation had been launched, but sources inside and outside of law enforcement said authorities were looking into how the film was acquired without authorization, and Mel Gibson is considering filing a civil suit. Hey, Mel, I'll be a character witness against them. Me, you got my number. You know me from The Simpsons. I met him once. Ladies and gentlemen, from the top of the news and also outside the bubble, bet you haven't heard this. The four suicide bombers who murdered more than 50 people in Istanbul, Turkey, during the past week. Who are they? They've been identified as Turkish citizens and ethnic Kurds with strong links to Al-Qaeda. Kurds. Those are our friends. They oppose the Turks. They're the reason we stopped the Turks from sending 10,000 troops to help us out in Iraq because of the possible tension between the Kurds and the Turks. All come from the troubled southeastern Turkish city of Bingöl. One alleged associate arrested after Thursday's twin attacks is reported to have fought for the Muslim cause in Chechnya. The Russians say they're terrorists. We disagree. And in Bosnia. And another allegedly had training. No, ladies and gentlemen, not in Afghanistan. In Pakistan. No, they're our allies. What are you worried about? They're not giving aid and they're training the guy that did the thing. And yet Pakistan is doing well. You know that Tony Blair and his people were disappointed this week when President George W. Bush went to London, went to England for a state visit. And Tony Blair was expecting to get some relief, something in return for his sterling loyalty. And one of the issues he was seeking some redress about was the state of some British prisoners in Guantanamo. Detainees. If they were prisoners, they'd have rights. Detainees at Guantanamo. No such. But Dateline Islamabad. Five Pakistanis held by the American military at Guantanamo Bay returned home this week, according to a senior Interior Ministry official, as a result of persistent efforts by the government of Pakistan and its parleys with the U.S. government. Five more Pakistanis detained at Camp X-Raid in Cuba have returned home, said Brigadier Iqbal Chima. The U.S. has released 21 Pakistanis since November 2002. 37 are still being held. The Pakistani government will continue to make efforts to secure the release of all Pakistanis. A total of 58 Pakistanis were captured in Afghanistan in November 2001. They were suspected of being members of the Taliban. One released Pakistani prisoner, Muhammad Sagir, has filed a lawsuit in Pakistan seeking $10 million in damages from the United States for his illegal detention, torture, and humiliation. Thousands of Pakistanis went to Afghanistan to support the Taliban against the American coalition. But Pakistan abandoned the Taliban after the September 11th attacks. So that's got to be steaming Tony Blair right about now. If only he was allowing some training camps to operate in Britain, maybe he'd get his detainees released too. Ladies and gentlemen, here's George W. Bush on the self-same tour of England this week, a speech that was widely lauded in Washington. Here's some of what he said.
We cannot turn a blind eye to oppression just because the oppression is not in our own backyard. No longer should we think tyranny is benign because it is temporarily convenient. Tyranny is never benign to its victims, and our great democracies should oppose tyranny wherever it is found. We will encourage the strength and effectiveness of international institutions. We will use force when necessary in the defense of freedom. And we will raise up an ideal of democracy in every part of the world.
So look out Uzbekistan, look out Burma. We're coming after you. Meantime, strengthen international organizations. Is that what he said? Did he say that? You hear that? So that would include what? The World Trade Organization, which has ruled our steel tariffs illegal. Another issue Tony Blair was awaiting for some relief on. In vain. Also this week, outside your ken, perhaps, a conference in Nairobi this month broke down. This was a conference to follow up the Montreal Protocol, a protocol designed to, agreed in 1987, brought about partly through the Reagan administration, to help heal the ozone layer. One of its provisions was the phasing out of methyl bromide, a pesticide, which is alleged to damage the ozone hole and also is connected with prostate cancer. Forget that. Developing countries agreed in 1997 to stop using it by the end of next year. They've succeeded in reducing it to 30% of its former level by introducing substitutes. Several countries foresee difficulties in completing the phase-out in time and have asked for year-long exemptions for some limited uses as permitted under the Montreal Treaty. But the United States, by itself, which uses a quarter of the world's consumption of the pesticide, is demanding that we should indefinitely be able to increase the use of methyl bromide or we'll bolt the treaty altogether. That's our strengthening of international. He didn't say all institutes, did he? I don't think he said all international institutes. He just said international. You know, there are many of them. There's, you know the ones. Here's UNESCO. Here's one that made the email rounds, but didn't make a lot of the media. In a startling break with the official White House and London approach to the subject. Richard Perle. Richard Perle, who always wears the red tie on TV, told an audience in London, quote, "I think in this case, Iraq, international law stood in the way of doing the right thing," unquote. Of course, the administration has consistently argued that the war was legal, either because we were enforcing UN Security Council resolutions, or it was an act of self-defense, preemptive self-defense, permitted by international law if you take out the preemptive part. Perle, a key member of the Defense Policy Board, which advises the U.S. Defense Secretary, said that international law would have required us to leave Saddam Hussein alone, unquote, and that would have been morally unacceptable. French intransigence, he added, meant there had been no practical mechanism consistent with the rules of the UN for dealing with Saddam Hussein. He was speaking at an event organized by the Institute of Contemporary Art. I guess this was an art piece. Perle's view is not the official one put forward by the White House. The U.S. is still... Oh, that's the end of that story. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's almost all the important news. Let me get to a couple more, and then we'll move on to the fun stuff. Because there is fun stuff this week. Oh, first of all, because we had a soundbite from George W. Bush, only fair to have a soundbite from the opposition. This is something probably that Rush Limbaugh will leap upon this week. Sorry to get there first. Limbaugh and a lot of Republican activists tend quite frequently to deride Tom Daschle, the Senate minority leader, the Democratic leader in the Senate, because his demeanor seems so kind of nice guy and reasonable, and the Republican attack dogs are always saying, no, he's really vicious. He's really, really a tough as nails. He's really feral in infighting, and he just puts on this demeanor on the exterior. You can judge for yourself after you hear this slip of the tongue. Kind of thing we used to howl about when Richard Nixon would do it, so it's only fair to at least give a ride to Tom Daschle on this weekend's edition of Meet the Press.
There will be things that I support the president on, things I oppose the president on. I've always said that. Where I think he's right, I'll support him. Where I think he's wrong, as we have on packing the courts, a number of other issues, including Medicare and the awful bill that we're now presented with, we're going to oppose him vigorously.
Thank you. How are we going to oppose him? Viagrally. Dateline Vienna. A study backed by the European Union on the rise of anti-Semitism in Europe has been shelved. Officials decided its findings were too controversial. The 112-page survey commissioned by the European Monitoring Center on Racism and Xenophobia, based in Austria, that's where I'd put it, found that many anti-Semitic incidents were carried out by Muslim and pro-Palestinian groups. Whoa, this just in. The research was ordered in response to fears that anti-Semitism was on the rise across Europe and apparently confirmed the truth of those claims. However, the center, which is the European Union's official racism watchdog, was unnerved by its results. A spokesman for the watchdog refused to comment to the British daily The Telegraph, which is about to be sold. But according to authoritative reports, officials admitted a political decision was taken not to publish it, partly because of fears it would increase hostility towards Muslims. The watchdog, set up in 1998, has published three reports on anti-Islamic attitudes in Europe, but has yet to publish any parallel findings on anti-Semitism. Officials objected that the study defined anti-Semitism incorrectly by including hostility to Israel. The anti-Semitism study is understood to have been presented to the watchdog's board before a decision not to publish was taken. The study was rejected as it was considered as being unrepresentative because the period it covered, May and June 2002, was too short to reach a full conclusion. They'll go back to the subject, I'm sure. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, dozens of soldiers who served in the current Iraq conflict. Come on, you know what's coming. are preparing to sue the British government, claiming they're suffering from a new form of Gulf War syndrome. Multiple vaccinations given in the run-up to the conflict are being blamed for chronic pain, stomach problems, rashes, swelling, fever, depression, and anxiety. Lawyers and medical experts say the symptoms are identical to those which affected thousands of veterans after the 1991 Gulf War. 13 soldiers have launched legal actions against the British Defense Department over what's being called Gulf War II syndrome. In addition, a former defense ministry employee has obtained the medical records of another 40 Iraq veterans also suffering similar symptoms. Previously healthy servicemen received inoculations and suffered serious reactions, said a spokesperson for the thing. I'd say get Mark Garagos on the case and get him quick. This is Le Show. Let's find out what people are sorry for this week. The apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Japan, Dateline Kumamoto, Japan, the head of a hotel in Kumamoto Prefecture that refused accommodation to 22 former patients and workers at a national sanitarium for Hansen's disease sufferers, lepers to you, visited the facility Thursday to offer an apology. Because of my ignorance and lack of conscience, I caused a lot of trouble and greatly offended those I would like to study hard about the disease so I can do something for those who suffer from the illness, said the general manager of the hotel. Three telemarketers were ordered to pay a total of $8,000 in fines Friday for violating Wisconsin's no-call list. Each of the companies also apologized for any telephone solicitations made to Wisconsin customers on the no-call list and pledged to make every effort to fully comply with the no-call laws. Another politician in a plane problem. Thai Airways and a Thai senator was removed from a plane during an argument over seating. Senator Precha Pintanant and his wife were escorted from the aircraft by armed security guards on November 8th when they complained they'd been downgraded from business class. Thai Airways made a formal apology, saying the captain had overreacted by announcing the couple were considered dangerous and ordering their removal. Although the captain followed the rules strictly, said the Prime Minister of Thailand, in psychological terms, he should have taken customer satisfaction into consideration as well as safety. Really? Attention, American Airlines. Attention, all American Airlines. Another Japanese apology. Tokyo Medical University Hospital mistakenly conducted ear surgery on the left ear of a hearing-impaired child instead of the child's right ear, the one that needed the operation, hospital doctors said. Hospital admitted the error and apologized to the patient's family. Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo has apologized for two decades of political violence and announced plans to help many of its victims. He asked Peruvians to forgive their government for the death or disappearance of tens of thousands of people during insurgencies over the past two decades. He also apologized for the suffering of many others who were victims of violence, terror, and human rights abuses. That should fix it. One day after comparing a gay pageant to a hobo convention in a Ku Klux Klan rally, a Maryland mayor, William Breckner, has softened his stance, saying he's worried about protesters, not the people who take part. My concern is not regarding the gay pageant, but the individuals who may come and demonstrate against the pageant and disrupt the peace. He said in an interview that he hadn't heard of plans to protest the pageant. Organizers of Miss Gay America National 2004 pageant had hoped to hold it at a hotel in Hagerstown, Maryland. A contract dispute has halted that plan. Men dressed as women will compete in the pageant. I am so there. The mayor had said a gay pageant might draw public backlash that could damage the city's image. My position on a gay pageant, he now says, does not mean I'm against any certain lifestyle. My concern is not regarding the gay pageant. My reference to hobos and the Klan was simply to reference that such events can cause controversy, and we're working hard in improving our community image. You sure are. We're working hard to make sure that Hagerstown is a community where all citizens can live in harmony. I do understand that my remarks, as reported, could be considered offensive, and apologize to those who've been offended by them. All right. As a person who sometimes dresses as a woman, I accept your apology. And British TV talk show host Des O'Connor had to apologize after guest Rod Stewart kept swearing. Stewart branded therapy a lot of BS, told how he got peed very quickly when he had Christmas dinner with three of his ex-girlfriends. Producers ordered the host to say sorry to the studio audience. Stewart couldn't seem to stop his foul language as he told anecdotes on the show. He said he used to smoke some effing joints in his hipping days. He said the only venues important to him as he starts a world tour were Glasgow, Edinburgh, and London. He said, sod the rest of them. That in Britain constitutes swearing, too. But we're allowed to say it in this country. Ladies and gentlemen, Jermaine Jackson this week denounced the charges, the three charges, which have not yet formally been filed, but an arrest warrant was issued, as you know, for Michael Jackson. The man who once had it contractually demanded that references to him on MTV include the sobriquet King of Pop, which is why they called him that, did surrender to authorities in Santa Barbara, was photographed in footage that went around the world in handcuffs, in a mugshot that reflected the apparent recent application of some facial makeup just before the handcuffs were attached. Anyway, the story's all over the place. This is, of course, his second brush with such charges. They were dropped. Well, they never were brought in 1993 after the complaining child and his parent agreed to a multi-million-dollar settlement with Jackson. As I say, Jermaine, his brother, called it a modern lynching. Michael's first reaction was to say it's odd that these charges would be filed just the day that my new CD is coming out. And oddly enough, there's one song that's not on the new CD.
Children are taken by force. Someone led them them laughing, made them feel safe, of course. Watch the parents crying, please, just return them unharmed. Michael goes to Vegas, no one's alarmed, and I can't hardly speak what I know. It's all right when it's wrapped up in bows. Any parents say, go, darling, there's one rule for men. A son don't need any, just a checkbook and a few famous friends. Vegas, no one was hurt or harmed. We love to watch the circus, but sometimes the clowns alarm me, and I can't hardly speak what I know. That it's all right when it's wrapped up in bows. And your parents say, go, darling, there's one rule for them. A checkbook and a few famous friends. There's one rule for many, some don't need any, just a checkbook and a few famous friends.
Just because, you know, the home of the homeless is also the home of the enablers. Ladies and gentlemen, now, changing the subject with whiplash-like speed. Just because. There'll be more about that. And everywhere else, so why bother? Why bother you? I'm going to read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A couple items sent in by listeners. That's what I like. I want to see what's in your trades. Show me your trade, babe. From Meat and Poultry magazine, The Legend of the Left-Handed Brisket. During a recent barbecue competition in Paola, Kansas, it reads like Paola. I don't know if that's the world capital of Paola, but it's Paola, Kansas. The topic of brisket cooking was discussed by a handful of competitors. One old-timer insisted that the key to his success in scoring well in this category has everything to do with selecting briskets that come from left-handed bovine. He contends that a majority of cows sleep on their left side and use the muscles in their right legs to stand up, thereby making the muscles on that side more developed and the meat less tender. He contended his ability to identify left-handed briskets in the meat case gives him a leg up on the competition. And from Assembly magazine, you don't want to know what they're assembling. Yes, you do. And you'll figure it out soon enough. Dateline Newark. Chicken processing creates a lot of waste, most notably chicken feathers. But Richard West, a University of Delaware chemical engineering professor, has found some novel uses for these leftover chicken feathers. Low-weight composite materials made from chicken feathers and soy resin could potentially be used for automobile parts and home building materials. The most obvious use, however, for the composite materials is electronic circuit boards. As electrons race along the circuits, they sometimes interact with the epoxy and slow down, an effect known as rubbernecking. But Richard Wohl, his materials are comprised of nano-sized hollow tubes and contain more air, which reduces rubbernecking and speeds connection. So when your computer speeds up, thank the chicken feathers. Oh, you don't have to thank me. I just read the trays for you. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the stopper in the bottle of this week's edition of the show. Oh, it'll stay fresh, sure. But I recommend opening a new one next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Across North America via Sirius Satellite Radio and around the world via the Internet on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like everybody being represented by Mark Garagos if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show playlists usually show up at harryshearer.com. Show farewell to Michael Kamen. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.